You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and a warm welcome along to the Daily Racing Podcast brought to you by William Hill. You join us on Wednesday's edition of the podcast where we've got jump racing all the way throughout the afternoon from Bangor, Exeter and Ayr. Then we're on the all-weather in the evening. We've got Kempton Park domestically and an Irish card over at Dundalk. You'll hear every race live from 12:50pm on William Hill's Racing Radio with Luke Elder, James Millman and Catherine Fry in the studio. But ahead of all that, joining myself, Sam Norris, to look ahead to four contests on Wednesday afternoon is Rory Delaghi. How are you, Rory?
I'm very well indeed, Sam. Thank you.
Good. Start our podcast today with the sad news, Rory. The passing of former champion jockey, 11-time champion jockey, Pat Eddery. Won the ARC four times, 14 classic wins. He was a bit of a legend of the sport, really, Rory.
He was. And I'm feeling my age a little bit, speaking to a few people around here who obviously are familiar with Pat's reputation but don't remember him much as a jockey. And Sam... I do. I remember watching him win the 1980 ARC on a filly called Detroit in a three-way photo. And he went on to win the ARC three more times in consecutive years in the 80s, including that absolutely amazing ride, an amazing race when Dancing Brave won, but possibly the finest flat race you will ever see. Almost just the perfect storm.
Yeah. Was it 86?
86.
When Dancing Brave won, yeah.
Of course, Dancing Brave wasn't originally his ride. Greville Starkey rode him in the infamous Derby where he was beaten. And of course, for all Pat's won the Derby several times, he'll always be remembered in many quarters for losing the Derby on El Gran Señor, which is a little bit harsh. He was an exceptional racehorse, but essentially a miler, but good enough to win Group 1s at a mile and a half. And indeed, he won the Irish Derby. But Pat tried to nurse him home in that. The front two came well clear, but Secreto, who was trained by Vincent O'Brien's son, beat him on the nod by a short head. But that tends to stick in people's memories as well. But he was an exceptional jockey. His father was Irish champion jockey, and his mother's father was also Irish champion jockey. And indeed, the pair of them dead heated for the Irish Guineas in 1944.
Well so bred then.
Extremely well bred for the game. But it wasn't until he came to England that that he flourished as a jockey. He came over very young. And it was... through the great trainer of jockeys, Frenchie Nicholson, David Nicholson's father, that he came out. He was champion apprentice under Frenchie Nicholson. Frenchie Nicholson was an extremely hard taskmaster, but a very, very good judge and shooter of jockeys. He taught them to be stylish in the saddle, but also taught them how to live their lives as well. He insisted that they knew how to conduct themselves properly. And Pat was an absolute gentleman, as everyone would tell you, as indeed pretty much anyone who came through the French Nicholson School was.
Yeah, seems to get rave reviews of everyone who's met him, and I'm sure, no doubt, over the next couple of days we'll be seeing wonderful tributes to Pat Eddery. Our thoughts are with all the family and everyone involved at this sad time, of course. In slightly lighter news, though, been seeing over the last few days and indeed the last couple of weeks some of the real protagonists of last season's jumping game coming back to the fore. We saw Arctic Fire hasn't lost his turn of foot over at Navan on Sunday, but the real highlight, of course, Rory, was Konigri's seasonal reappearance at Sandown. Yes, only had two rivals to beat. Yes, was 4-1 on, but you can't help but be taken the way he attacks his fences and puts his opponents to a sword with an unrelenting gallop that none can live with.
Yeah, you could have put 30 horses in that race with him and he'd have won it probably more impressively, because the rest of them would have been getting in each other's way. And I think a few people have crabbed the performance by saying, well, the second favourite, Southfield Theatre, didn't run his race. But it's not that he didn't run his race. He tried he couldn't match strides, but he tried to keep tabs on Konigri, and that broke him, and he ended up finishing third. The horse who finished second ran his race, but was ridden slightly more conservatively. I thought it was an absolutely awesome performance. I know, you know, it's a different kettle of fish in the Hennessy or the King George or the Gold Cup, but the bottom line is this horse is very special indeed. The only worry with him coming back is that young horses who are thrown into the Cheltenham Gold Cup, even if they're impressive winners, there's a long list of them who struggled to make the same impact. Millhouse was the new Golden Miller when he won in 1963 as a six-year-old. Of course, he then ran into Arkell, but you know his career took a downturn after Ram getting beaten up by Arkell a couple of times. Long run, you could say, you know, he won one of the best modern Gold Cups, beating Denman and Cotto Star in tremendous style as a six-year-old again. And he didn't reach the same heights again. I mean, obviously, he's still kicking around, and he's going to be hunter chasing this season. But he didn't go on as expected from that. And there was a worry that Coney Gree, you know, hugely impressive in March, that might just have left a mark on him, and he wouldn't quite be the same this season. He looked at least as good as ever, and there might be more to come from him. So that was a tremendously encouraging reappearance. I've heard people say he needs to improve if he's going to win a Hennessy. I don't know where they get that notion from. I really don't. The rest of them are going to struggle. The thing about the Hennessy is because he'll have a massive weight to carry. Well, that's relative.
Yeah.
You don't get massive weights anymore. Arkell had to carry 12 stone 7 in a Hennessy. He'll have to carry 11 stone 12, which is much easier to carry. But obviously, a lot of high-class horses can run in the race receiving weight from him, so it looks like a really, really good race. But in saying that, the weight won't bother Coney Gree in the slightest, and his relentless galloping and superb jumping, his jumping is an absolute joy to watch, will be very hard to match. Everything needs to improve to beat him. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. I think I'd agree with that. And he couldn't have won more impressively on Sunday. I know Southfield Theatre was eased down in the closing stages, but Coney Gree's rated 18 pounds better than him, and he's ended up beating him by 44 lengths.
Yeah, and the runner-up, Seventh Sky, is a horse rated 140. Mm. You know, these are, at the very least, high-class handicappers. Southfield Theatre, of course, was second in the RSA. And bear in mind, that's where Coney Gree really should have been going last year, according to most people. So there shouldn't have been that much between them, really. But he's beaten Seventh Sky by 25 lengths, eased up in the end. So, you know, that makes him a 170-plus horse easily with something to spare. I mean, we're talking, you know, he's right up there with Denman already.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't need to do any more to prove himself as good as Denman. Obviously, Denman stayed around for 3 or 4 years and came back from a serious injury or illness to win a second Hennessy. So in terms of longevity, he's got something to prove. In terms of ability, he doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, that's the comparisons everyone's drawing, isn't it? When you think of weight-carrying victories, it is old Denman. And Coney Gree, 9-2 favourite with us here for the Hennessy. No issues with him winning that for you, Rory, as long as...
No, I mean, obviously, there are other horses in there who are high class, and one or two could give him a race, depending what the lineup is in the end. But I've got no qualms about him in there. You know, it's often you'll see a high-class horse at Hennessy and go, well, the weight might beat him, but Denman showed that weight doesn't have to beat you in that. Burrhill Lad carried 12 stone to win it and after his Gold Cup as well. So I see no reason why he doesn't set a very high standard in it and shouldn't go close. We could see an outstanding... you know, a Gold Cup hope winning it with, you know, running in it with 10 stone something. I remember when Jodami carried 10 stone 1 in the Hennessy the season he won the Gold Cup. He didn't win the Hennessy, by the way.
Right.
He was beaten by one who was 25 pounds out of the handicap or thereabouts.
Okay.
He was the handicap certainty of the season, but it doesn't always work that way. One Man, of course, he really ought to have won a Gold Cup in terms of his ability, also won a Hennessy off 10 stone odds. So you can get a Gold Cup class horse in there with no weight on his back. So it's only retrospectively you can see what the task is. But it won't slow him down. You know, he will put up a very, very good performance in Hennessy. He's always looked... They thought he was a Newbury specialist, didn't they?
Yeah.
Last year, I mean, when he won in his chase debut at the Hennessy meeting... The next plan for him was the following year's Hennessy. So it's always been on the cards. And he will give it a good shot.
Yeah. We'll just have a quick line from you then. We don't want to spend too long, obviously, talking about next year's Cheltenham. We are only in November. But the Gold Cup market has been subject to a bit of confusion amongst the public. Vitor, 4-1 favourite, 6-1 Coney Gree. Is that the wrong way around for you? Vitor never proven at the trip, albeit he was mightily impressive last year.
I don't have a major problem with it. I think the problem I have is the notion that you would get people to vote on whether the betting's correct.
Right.
The whole concept of betting is you vote by going into a shop with a slip in your hand and a tenner. That's how you vote on what you think the prices are. The fact that people just have their say about who's going to win a race without having a bet is a bit bonkers to me. the chances of the Gold Cup being run on soft grounds again are reasonably slim going by the pattern of the last 20 years. And on fast grounds, or good grounds, Vautour would, you know, would be a difficult horse to beat in a race that's run in the way a Gold Cup normally is. In saying that, you've got a horse in Coningry who will not be lobbing along for 3 miles. You know, in a Gold Cup where they lob along for 3 miles, then a horse like Vautour, who has a speed for 2.5 miles and a lot of class, can win it through good jumping and a turn of foot at the end. The way Coningry runs means that's not the way the Gold Cup will be run this year, and therefore it will put much more emphasis on stamina. I know people are saying, well, Vautour is not proven at the trip, but a lot of Gold Cup winners in the last 10, 15 years, similarly at this stage, weren't proven over the trip, and that's the way they were trained. They were trained not to blunt their speeds by racing over 3 miles too soon, but the trainers knew that they were good enough to tackle the trip in time. Once you race on soft or heavy ground over the Gold Cup trip, which is 3 miles, 2.5 furlongs, then it becomes all about stamina. And therefore, horses with good jumping and a good turn of foot find those assets aren't enough. So a soft ground Gold Cup would see Coningry clear favourite. A good ground Gold Cup, I think a lot of people will still see Vautour as the one to beat. But of course, there's a lot to happen between then. Coningry is definitely a fair bit above Vautour at this stage. But you've got a built-in potential improvement.
Yeah.
And although you can say, well, they're both second-season chasers, so therefore Coningry might improve the same amount, the fact that Coningry ran in the Gold Cup means we were able to see what he was capable of, whereas Vautour was able to do his winning on the bridle last year, and there could be another stone of improvement that we haven't seen yet. So there's not a huge amount between them, but in terms of what they've achieved, Coningry deserves that top billing. But it doesn't really matter. This is anti-post betting. If you have a strong opinion about it, you should be having
back
a bet.
It, yeah.
If you have a strong opinion but don't want to have a bet, and you don't really have an opinion.
Yeah, I see what you mean. And why would you moan about Coningry? If you fancy Coningry, why would you moan?
Why anyone moans about horses being too big in the betting and then not backing them is beyond me. And yet I see it all the time.
Yeah, I see your point. Very interesting thoughts. Then we must move ahead to take a look at some of Wednesday's racing. Three jumpers in the afternoon on Wednesday from Ayr, Bangor and Exeter. We'll take in one race from Exeter, two from Bangor, and then one from the Poly Track at Kempton Park. But we'll start with Exeter's 140. This is a novices limited handicap chase over an extended 3 mile trip. 9 runners going down to post for this class 3. What did you like, Rory?
I don't want to say I've got a system. That's always slightly dubious. But I do. These are very specialist events. Novices, limited handicap chases. You can have the limited out if you like. Novices handicaps this time of year tend to be for horses who are bred to go chasing, but are running over fences for the first time and are running based on their handicap marks over hurdles. There are certain trainers who specifically target horses at these races. They will get a horse and they go, you'll be a really good chaser, but you need 18 months before you do it. So especially horses who've run in point to points, for example. So it'll be a run in a bumper, maybe 3 runs over hurdles, handicap mark gained, maybe a run in a handicap as well over hurdles, but all the while, chasing is the target. Some trainers do that very specifically, some don't. And a lot of trainers with young chasers will use the first couple of runs over fences as a means of gaining experience. And that would include the likes probably of John Joe O'Neill, who have a couple of fancied horses here. There's one trainer who has a remarkable record with her horses first time over fences in a handicap, and that's Emma Lavelle. She's had 4 runners in novices handicap chases this autumn who were having their first runs over fences after a break. All 4 won. And we're not talking short price ones. Because they're handicaps, they look very competitive on paper. And she's had 4 at decent prices as well. And she's got a really interesting one here who must be a reasonable price on form, On De Run. A horse who might have won his only start in points, but for falling. Possibly just beaten at the time, but he was fancied for that. He's got a real chasing pedigree as well. He ran very well on heavy ground on his bumper debut at Ascot, behind a decent performer. He's from the family of a Grand National winner, but he was stuffed on his only handicap start over hurdles, and indeed he was stuffed behind one of these runners. He was beaten 60 odd lengths by Heronshaw at Warwick in February. Yard couldn't train a winner at the time. Dreadfully out of form, Emma Lavelle then. Emma Lavelle now, bang in form, And whatever Horse Hipton over hurdles last season, those who've been switched to fences quickly after only a few runs have done much better. So there's no way Onderon can be favourite for this race, because people will look at the form and go, well, he's 60 lengths behind another runner in this race, so he must be a double-figure price. So I see him going off at a reasonable price, but I think he's a cracking bet, simply because that's the way Emma Lavelle trains her horses. And once you get inside a trainer's head and you see that things are going to plan, then that's a really, really good way to back them. And it served me well this season. I've missed one of those four, but a couple of them have done very well. And I'm more than happy to follow Onderon, because everything's in his favour. He's got no weight in his back. 10 stone 3. His handicap mark of 116 is almost certainly, I mean, it looks a harsh mark based on that run at Warwick. That's almost certainly no indication of how good he is. And indeed, his bumper run suggests he's well handicapped, as indeed does that point-to-point form. So we expect he'll be a decent price. People might catch on to the fact that Emma Lavelle has been winning these races, but it doesn't jump off the page at you, only if you're looking at it. And it's something I looked at before the season started, which trainers do well in this sphere. And there are half a dozen who do very well. Emma Lavelle's got the highest strike rate off them. Nigel Twiston Davis does very well. Malcolm Jefferson does quite well too. You know, you look at the trainers who do well with it. You also look at the profile of the horses. Ideally, horses with real chasing pedigrees. Ideally, horses who've come from the Irish point-to-point field. And ideally, horses who've been very lightly raced over hurdles before making their start over fences. And ideally, with a break between their last race and their first race over fences. And that's exactly what you have with Onderon. And that's exactly what you've had with all the other Emma Lavelle winners in this sphere this season.
Okay, all things point to Onderon then for Rory in that 140 event at Exeter. We'll go to Bangor now to take in two from there. We'll start with their 2 o'clock. This is a handicap chase over 3 miles. Class 2 event with 13 of them down to go to post. Quite a few of these making their seasonal reappearance, Rory.
Yes, and it makes it slightly tricky race as a result. The horse who makes most appeal at first glance is one who has had a recent run, is Chantu Magic. He finished behind Arctic Cavalier on a seasonal reappearance at Newton Abbott in what's quite a warm graduation event. He was well beaten in the end, but he was handy until the second last and weakened out of it as if the race was needed. He was a course and distance winner in softish ground here last season as a novice, albeit in a weak race. And he doesn't look badly handicapped off a mark of 141. He wasn't the most consistent last year, but he comes from a yard in very, very good form at the moment. He's a son of Chantu, and although most of his form has come on sort of good to soft ground, the deeper surface here at Bangor shouldn't be an issue for him. And of course, we know the track isn't an issue. So he gets the vote at the moment. There might be money around for one or two of these. It's interesting that it's a race named after Arkell's owner and Duchess of Westminster. And it's always interesting to see if you can find a connection between the person the race is named after and any of the trainers in the race. The only real connection here is the Duchess of Westminster had horses trained by John Joe O'Neill, and John Joe's got a couple in the race. So catching on is quite interesting. Having gone off favourite for the Midlands National at Uttoxeter and then finished fifth in a big field in the Scottish National in his final start on ground that was too fast for him. He does want to test the stamina. But for a horse who stays very well, he does have a reasonable turn of foot at the end of his races, so he might get away with the 3 miles here. The slight concern would be that not that many of John Joe's are firing fully at the first time of asking, so he might just need the run. But he's an interesting one for the season. Algernon Pazan would be the other one that I'd be interested in here. Well beaten in the Bet365 Gold Cup when last seen at Sandown, but he won first time out, and he's always been a horse who's gone well fresh. Nigel Twiston Davis has son Sam on board, which is always significant these days. He's a six-year-old and should still be improving. He doesn't look badly handicapped on his best form anyway. An easy winner off 124 earlier this year and placed off marks close to what he's off at the moment. He was a very good second at Haydock in February over a trip that was probably slightly short for him. And he's only £2 higher now. So with more improvement liable to come, he looks a danger. I'd be wary of Bob Ford. He won the West Wales Grand National at Foss last year. You might remember that day when nothing else finished. Big field, staying handicapped chase. The ground was so bad. Racing shouldn't have gone ahead, essentially.
Right.
But he was the only one to finish. And then eventually one of the others refused at the last and was then continued to finish second. There was a steward's inquiry into it and lots of discussion about whether the jockey did the right thing or not. But Bob Ford finished absolutely legless. And he's pulled up on all three starts either side of that. So I'd be worried about whether he will bounce back from that really hard run at all. So as it stands, it's Shantou Magic, the main choice, and Algernon Pazam, a big danger. And of course, it depends to a large degree how that's priced up. It's worth giving a little bit of credence to Cloudy 2 as well. He was well beaten over hurdles on his reappearance, but that would have been to put him spot on for a race like this. And he was Cheltenham Festival standard. He ran in the Gold Cup 2 years ago. I've never thought he stayed 3 miles fully, though. The bare 3 miles is probably okay for him. He didn't stay the 3 1/4 in the Gold Cup, but he's generally been campaigned at that trip. I've always thought his best form is around 2.5, 2 miles 6. But he's dropped in the weights to a mark of 145, and he's dangerous to dismiss. But you can't pick too many in the race, and as I said, I'll side with Shantou Magic.
Okay, Shantou Magic then for Rory, getting the pick there. We'll move ahead to Bangers 3 o'clock. This is a handicap hurdle, 2 mile and 3, the trip for this one. We've got the dead eight runners at the time of recording. What did you fancy here?
Another interesting race where it's difficult to know what kind of form one or two of these are in. There's a couple owned by Carl Hinchy in here, who's picked up recently. One of them is an ex Grade 1 winner, Chief and Choice of the second one. Royal Boy won the Tolworth Hurdle for Nicky Henderson a couple of years ago. Has only raced once since. That was on his debut for Rebecca Curtis and Carl Hinchy when falling at Aintree at the weekend. So whether he lines up or not, I don't know, but he's been declared for the race. He took quite a heavy fall, I thought, in that race won by Bob's Worth. It's interesting that he looked so promising as a young horse and yet was sold from the Henderson Jar for just £2,000. So he's clearly had his problems. And that might also be the case with the other Hinchy runner, Chieftain's Choice, who makes his debut for Kevin Frost here. He wasn't beaten far in a competitive handicap hurdle at the Grand National meeting when last seen. But although Kevin Frost had one go very close lately, a lot of his horses are running below par at the moment, so Chieftain's Choice might be one for later in the day. Fox Cub won this last season and has almost certainly been aimed at it again. Looked badly in Edith's run at Fontwell early in October. Will be better for the run, but it is possible the handicapper might just have got him. Now, he's only £2 higher than for winning this last year, but it looks a slightly better race and he's not guaranteed to get the run of things. So I thought, again, Gold Present is Nicky Henderson's representative in the race. Didn't think he was terribly well handicapped in what he's achieved. So I was going to go for After Eight Civilla, Nick Williams' runner. Lizzie Kelly rides, obviously. Nick is Lizzie's stepdad. He's got his act together in his last couple of starts either side of a seasonal break, winning a modest enough event at Wincanton from Benbecula. And then he ran out an easy winner from Dragon's Den on his reappearance with Lizzie Kelly in the plate. He's worn a hood for his last two starts and seems to have improved for that. And there might still be a little bit more to come from him. So with questions against a few of these, I think After Eight Civilla looks the safest choice.
OK, After Eight Civilla then getting the pick for Rory in the 3 o'clock at Bangor. We're going to take in some all-weather action now with Kempton's 740. This is a condition stakes over 7 furlongs. 7 runners down to go to post. We've got Grey Mirage, who won the race 2 years ago. Chucky Royale, who's a bit of an all-weather specialist as well these days. What did you make of these?
Chucky Royale is the one to beat on the figures. But I thought he was a wee bit disappointing behind Lancelot de Lac here last time. That was over 6 furlongs. He's as effective over 7, but I wouldn't say that the 7 would necessarily suit him much better. And that the form looks okay when you say he was beaten, you know, 3 lengths by Lancelot de Lac. But he had moderate horses between him and the winner, and it was slightly lackluster, to be honest. So he needed to step up on that. According to official ratings on the all weather, he's got a big chance of winning this. But as I said, he hadn't been running up to his very best on turf recently, and that run last time, unless it was designed to put an edge on him, which is hard to believe given that he'd raced twice in September anyway, so it wasn't like he needed the run. I'd be a little bit worried about him, so I'm looking elsewhere. There's a really interesting one in here who's impossible to weigh up. Glorious Days, making his first start for Ed Walker. One of the best performers in Hong Kong at around a mile. He won the Hong Kong Mile a couple of years ago, December 2013. He also won the Stewards' Cup in Hong Kong, which, although it sounds like a 6 furlong race, is also over a mile. His earnings there are the equivalent of 2.7 million in sterling. So it tells you, A, that he's been a bit of a money spinner. It also tells you how good the money is out in Hong Kong anyway. Yeah. So here he is, after a break, competing for his share of £19,000. Difficult to know where to put him. He does have a handicap rating, and it puts him right up with the best of these. But obviously, racing at Kempton is very different from racing at Sha Tin. And he's a very difficult one to weigh up. If he runs to his best, if he translates his best form back to the UK to the Polytrack in Kempton, then he's got a big chance. But I think you've got to wait and see how they bet on him. Grey Mirage is the obvious one, having won it last year, and he came back to form to win on his latest start, although that was back in April at Lingfield. But Marco Botti would have had an opportunity of running him if he wanted to get an outing into him. So the chances are that this has always been a target, and he's happy enough with him without a run. So fitness shouldn't be an issue. Intransigent's got claims on form, but he's run stinkers in his last two races, and they're trying headgear on him now, so he's got plenty to prove. And I've got an old friend in here. I love Triple Chocolate. It's a horse I like an awful lot, but he's lost his way on three starts this season since winning at over 6 furlongs here in February, and he wouldn't be up to this class at his best anyway. So I hope he runs respectably and that he has a good winter Triple Chocolate, but you couldn't really fancy him in this class. And I think the three-year-olds have a tough task as well, Just As Well and Explosive Lady. They're not out of it entirely in terms of the ratings, but I think three-year-olds have a tough task against their elders at this time of the year. So it's boils down to a three-way go between Chukka Royale, The Dark Horse Glorious Days, and Grey Mirage. And given I was a little disappointed with Chukka Royale last time out, I'm going to side with Grey Mirage, for whom fitness shouldn't be an issue.
Okay, Grey Mirage, Rory, then, in the 7:40 at Kempton. Just remind us, please, one more time, your selections for Wednesday.
I'd be delighted to, Sam. In the 1:40 at Exeter, I'm going for On the Run, who would probably be my nap vote of the four. In the 2:00 at Bangor, Shantou Magic just gets the vote ahead of Algernon Pazam. In the 3:00 after 8, Sivola looks the safest bet, and Grey Mirage shouldn't lack for fitness in the 7:40.
There we are. Lovely stuff. The thoughts of Rory De Laghi ahead of Wednesday's racing. Remember to join us on Racing Radio from 12:50 p.m. for Bangor, Exeter and Ayr in the afternoon, Kempton and Dundalk in the evening. It's Luke Elder in the chair opposite James Millman and Catherine Fry for every race on Wednesday afternoon. Thank you very much for joining me on this edition of the podcast, Rory, and best of luck on Wednesday.
Thank you very much indeed.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.